Brothers, and I'm joined by a very important musician, Lacey Johnson. Say hi, Lacey.
Hello.
And I've asked Lacey to join me for this episode of Game Grooves Uncovered because I want to talk a little bit about her career on YouTube and just her... I like to affectionately call her the collab queen of EGM because I swear within the past couple months I've seen Lacey's name and face on more thumbnails than I can count, which is not a bad thing because it's like, wow, just... I would say it like you're reaching like Ro Panaganti levels of collabdom. Like that's the only other person I can think of that's like collabed with so many people in the VGM community.
That is high praise.
Yeah.
That's very high praise.
So Lacey is actually the first of the Game Grooves Platinum artists. Game Grooves Platinum is a new series that I started to basically highlight artists within the VGM community that I think deserve some extra attention. And I really want to get like basically a way to honor people that I think are doing really good work and not just making good music, but kind of doing something for the benefit of the community. And obviously collaborating is not necessarily easy, but it's a great way to bring the community together. So let's see. First of all, let's start with the first time you picked up an instrument. No.
oh God.
We're going to try. We're going to try and keep this episode, I think, centered around your experience collaborating, right? I guess let's start with, did you have to get to a point where you felt comfortable as an artist, like asking certain things of other people and like putting yourself out there like, hey, I'm willing to do this. I'm confident enough that I can provide X part for whatever song, or being able to tackle so many different styles, because that's one thing I've noticed about your music is that you really kind of defy labels. Like you affectionately call it, I think, like, what is it? Nerd punk, or I forget the exact term.
Nerd pop punk.
There you go. Nerd pop punk. I missed the pop part, but you do a lot more than that. Now you've got your lo-fi stuff. So at what point, it just seems like recently you've really kind of taken off with the collaborating game. I'm wondering, like, what was there a change in mindset or what happened that precipitated that?
I would say it definitely took me kind of realizing what kind of music I wanted to make on YouTube, because for a while, at least the first like year and a half, I wasn't sure about what kind of music I really wanted to put out there. And I was doing pop music covers, I was doing just kind of anything I wanted, K-pop music, like anything that came to mind for me. And then finally, when I realized that I had a vision of video game music and like anime music and pretty much just all the things that I live for, that gave me a lot of confidence as an artist to reach out to people, to even just be so bold as to say, hey, I really would like to work with someone who wants to work with me, because I had some semblance of an idea of what I'm capable of. And I would say the reason it's popped off recently was mainly because I was confident in my hardware. I'd spent a long time researching exactly the kind of interface that I wanted and my signal flow and everything. And I spent a really long time finessing it and getting it happy to where I'm very happy with the outcome of it. So it's definitely made me very bold in DMing someone and being like, hey, I want this part. Please let me do it. But recently, I mean, I think just because of quarantine and, you know, ye old 2020, everyone kind of wants to work with more people. And I've been so fortunate to benefit from that, just in, you know, the fact I'm making friends all over the world. It's really kind of amazing.
Yeah, this is definitely the year for collaborating, because we can't do it in person.
it isn't safe.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned two big things. I think I really think especially up and coming VGM artists could benefit from and learn from. One was that you were confident in your musical style. And that you had a vision for your music. And I want to touch on that in a little bit. And the other thing was that you had figured out an efficient workflow so that you were confident you could deliver a product. Because I think a lot of times, I mean, I've had this happen. I've collaborated with technically one other person for my music. But I think a lot of times, you know, having an efficient workflow and knowing that you're able to deliver is so key and so critical to building like a good collaborative effort, because you don't want to get stuck. You don't want to be the person that's like, oh, I just can't get this part, or like, I'm having trouble with my interface, and you keep giving, you know, not excuses, but you have to delay it, and then you feel bad, and then it starts this cycle of, you know, guilt and whatever.
Oh, absolutely.
I think those are two really critical things. Is it's not necessarily like you've got to have the best equipment. It's that you have to be comfortable with it and have a workflow that you're comfortable with.
But absolutely.
Circling back to that first point, so the vision for your music, what would, so you said nerd pop punk, right? But what would you say your vision now is? You said you kind of started out with a pretty broad set of ideas, but you've narrowed it down now. If you had to put Lacey Johnson, not in a box, but like in a single sentence, how would you describe your music?
Ooh, that's tough. I definitely enjoy the fact that I can kind of wear so many hats. Like recently, I would say, especially just with the persona music I've been making, I've been really enjoying rapping on the songs. Okay. It's something that I've always loved to do. I can spit a flow, but, you know, it's something I hadn't really had the opportunity to do, because I do love rock music, and that's pretty much my foundation just in how I base my covers. But it's been really fun, and even some things I'm working on here that I can't quite talk about quite yet, but there's a lot of different kinds of styles coming up for me. So I think, honestly, if I had to be vague and annoying, I would call myself versatile and diverse.
No, that's fair.
But
I would,
you know,
agree with that.
It's kind of like, I love rock and roll, but then the next week I might just do a rap song, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, well, that's about par for the course. But pretty much lately I'm having fun really being very synth focused, making sure I have very strong rhythms and riffs going on, and it's been a lot of fun just incorporating those elements into every cover that I make, no matter the style.
Right. And I would say like the keytar seems like pretty big part of your branding and your identity as well, given that it's like part of your logo. And there aren't too many people in BGM that like really rock a keytar, maybe like Jonathan Young and a few other people.
Mm-hmm.
But see, and you know, I'm kind of curious, because on the one hand, that versatility just means that listeners don't always know what to expect, so it's always fresh. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, from a branding perspective, you know, I wish I had George Andrew Spriggs here to like sit beside me and talk about this. But branding wise, do you think mm-hmm. it's like difficult to describe your music to other people, or do you think it hurts you that one week you might be doing a rock cover and the next week you're doing rap? Have you noticed any like shift in audience, or like, from a style perspective, do you feel like that's a problem, or is it just something you're not really worried about at all?
I don't really worry too much about it. I think because I focus on so many genres, it kind of casts a wider net.
Right.
I would say, I mean, especially as of late, like, people love Persona 4, and I love Persona 4, so it's I'll nerd out about it for a couple more weeks. Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
But definitely, it's interesting, because usually when I'm asked to collaborate, or even just on my channel in general, I play a lot of instruments and I sing, but usually if I'm working with someone, or even if I'm doing it for myself, there is equal parts of, you know, there's a lot of keytar going on, there's a lot of vocals going on. So I feel kind of freed in that aspect, in that I can pretty much do whatever I'm feeling in the moment artistically.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel it's going to reflect my brand, because I do integrate my vocals and I do integrate my keyboard all the time in almost everything that I do with people.
So you have that consistency, even though the styles might shift, you still have, you know, Lacey Johnson vocals and Lacey Johnson keytar shredding, which we need more of. Like, the world needs more keytar. I feel like keytar is like the EWI or EWI, or whatever you call it. It's like one of those instruments that like more people need to get on.
Yeah.
Because it just looks so damn cool when you're, like, rocking it. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And Evie, I just love how they sound. And, like, I've thought about getting one myself, but probably won't. Okay, those are really, really good answers, because, I think that's it's hard. I mean, again, I don't even dare to call myself a musician, but I occasionally make music. And I have the same problem of, like, wanting to do so many things and having a hard time focusing on like what is it that makes my music my music. So it's good that you have like a good sense of no matter, you know, what I'm doing, there's going to be some foundations or like a certain approach that you take to it. If it's a rock approach or whatever else. And you mentioned Persona 4 because, you know, Persona's games are just great OSTs.
The best. The best.
Yeah. So, okay, that's a great answer. Let's get back to the other one, the workflow efficiency.
Yes.
So, what is your, like, I don't want to say what is your process, but yeah, what is your process when it comes to, like, a collaboration? Like, just run me through a typical collaboration and how you typically, like, both ends, whether you're doing a collaborative part for somebody else or you're collaborating with someone else. Like, what are the expectations that you go into a collaboration with? You know, whether it's arrangement or like file transfer or who's providing what parts, that kind of thing.
So I'd say the majority, and I'll start with this one, I'd say the majority of this year has been actually people reaching out to me to participate on their channel, which is fine. Mm-hmm. So in that process, you know, I get an email briefly describing kind of what they're hoping to achieve with it, what they are expecting of me, and if I can do it, which lately, yes, then I, you know, respond. And usually I try and give myself a week or less to get them the part. Sometimes life happens, of course, but I'd say something I pride myself on is that I'm very fast. I work incredibly fast.
Okay. Why do you think that is?
I think I'm a super organized person. And usually when I'm producing something, I have a good idea of what I want to do with it by the time I agree to it. And I, like I said, my workflow is very simple and I've saved my own presets and I've made things very easy for myself to deliver. But yeah, usually, you know, within a week of agreeing to it, I've recorded it, sent it back to the collaborator via email, made sure that they're happy with it. And then that following week, I record my part on video and send it off, and then, you know, it comes out eventually, which is great. And then if someone is if I want to reach out to someone and collaborate, usually I like to be incredibly specific because I am definitely a control freak in my music production and I have a sound that I like and I have a balance that I like. And I kind of expect that person to be okay with my creation. And usually they are. I mean, the people I've asked are good friends, so I feel like it's not, you know, something totally outside of what's allowable. But, you know, same similar kind of process. I try and be as specific as I can. I like including time codes. I love when collaborators include time codes and or BPMs and or keys, just to tonality, just to know that I can rely on that data and that they're that organized like I am. But so, you know, I try and give a deadline to whoever I'm working with and just say, this is when I'm hoping to release this. And, you know, usually the person I'm reaching out to is just as excited about whatever the cover is that I am. So we get it done pretty quickly. Like Ro and I, when we did Burn recently from Hamilton, that was started as a joke of me responding to him on Facebook, just being like, oh, dude, like, you should totally do a metal cover of Burn. If only you knew someone who was as obsessed with Hamilton as you are. And he messaged me and he said, but really, though, like, can we do that? And I went, yeah. So, like, that next week, he sent me a full track. I did keys. I did vocals on it. We sent it back and forth a couple times. So that was kind of a total collaboration with mixing and recording for both of us. But, awesome. You know, it's definitely circumstantial, but in general, I'm incredibly organized and very timeline driven and deadline driven. So I need someone who's definitely willing to put up with me per se. But even then, I mean, most people are incredibly competent on YouTube and especially in our community. They're incredible musicians. They do it all. They're their own engineers, own producers, and you know, I generally don't ever have to come down on someone. They usually deliver me exactly what I'm looking for and it comes out great.
So gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. So, one thing I want to touch on. So you said that you usually have a good idea of, like, when you're providing material to someone else for their collaboration, you have a good idea of how you want it to play, and you've got this mm-hmm. efficient, streamlined process. How long have you, like, I kind of want to get into this, because I think I want to get into, like, how long have you been playing, let's say, the keytar, or how long have you been singing?
Okay. The keytar I have been playing for 1.5 years.
Okay.
But I'm a pianist, and I was a concert pianist until I was 21. So okay. It definitely, I've been playing the piano my life, right. pretty much. So right. almost 30 years. So it's kind of, I bought it mainly with the intention of performing live with my band.
Right.
Because it was a lot more portable than bringing my giant keyboard everywhere. And I love it. It's so fun to play it like I do my guitars and my bass and stuff. It's so great to be able to thrash around with it.
Right.
Yeah.
The performance aspect.
It's so much fun. Please, more people get into it. More women, yeah. please, as well. Yeah. I need more ladies to rock out with.
You heard guitar. You heard Lacey, ladies of VGM.
I need
more
you.
Keytar.
But same thing with vocals too. I've been singing since I was a kid.
Okay.
Yeah, and I definitely have prided myself
so,
on
like,
being a good mimic of
the point that I want to try and make is that this, like, did not happen overnight. The confidence
no.
that you have and the
yeah.
speed. Because I don't think a lot of people want this, but some people, like, are looking kind of for the shortcuts, or like, oh, they're just doing it quickly, so, like, you know, I can just speed through it. It's like, you've got to have the confidence and, like, the building blocks of understanding mm-hmm. like music, or both in terms of arrangement and how to deconstruct it and how to, I don't know, how to make it work. Right.
Yeah.
You got to put in that stuff behind the scenes before you could do the, like, the flashy collabs with the keytar.
Yeah, very true. So. It's a tremendous amount of work.
Right.
And I don't want anyone to think that it is really easy. I've spent the last 9 months actually really streamlining this process, and I feel very happy with the production schedule. But, you know, most days it is basically a full-time job.
Right.
And it's something I went to college for. I've spent a lot of time perfecting, and, you know, I learn all the time. I watch webinars, and I used to go to seminars all the time to try and learn as much as I possibly can. I'd say, if anything, if you're just starting out and audio engineering is terrifying and, you know, all this, I'd say really just engross yourself in the process, you know, learn the building blocks of it, figure out what comes really easily to you, figure out what's very challenging, and then you can kind of see what your needs are and where you should be focusing your learning. And I always try and learn something new every single week. So
that's a good philosophy.
Know, it is. I mean, I feel like you'll only become better the more that you're learning. So,
yeah.
you know, every week, if you're learning something new, look, by the end of the year, you're going to have, what, 52?
You have nothing else to learn.
52 new things. But yeah, it takes a lot of time. And I've been very fortunate to invest in my own studio and, you know, put in that time and effort to really be very particular about the gear I have, because I've spent years researching it, and, you know,
right.
it's all just about figuring out what you need, not what anyone else needs or what anyone else does,
right.
but, you know, figuring it out for yourself, and that way you can easily make the best workflow for you.
So one last thing I was
sure.
thinking of, do you have, like, a short list of, like, do's and don'ts for collabs, at least in your opinion, like Lacey's, Johnson's do's and don'ts for collaborating that you can distill
Ooh.
On the spot?
Ooh.
You don't have to provide examples, because I don't expect you to,
I would just say. No, definitely. I would say be specific.
Okay.
If you're, you know, set expectations with whatever that initial reach out email is, or message, or whatever. Don't just say, hey, let's do this. And it's like, okay. That person's probably going to be like, no. But maybe if you have some sort of idea, then that would be cool. But yeah, definitely being specific, set your expectations. Have a very high quality thing to deliver. So your product should be very high quality. And I would say also, you know, in our sphere, in the YouTube sphere, having a really good video can be very helpful as well. So, mm-hmm. you know, something, even if you're using a cell phone camera, learn how to use that cell phone cameras to the best ability that you possibly can. You know, I mean, just because you're using whatever you have, it doesn't mean that you can't deliver something really remarkable, honestly. See, and especially,
I just feel like you're calling me out right now, though, because
it's true, though.
My only collab video was with Gundreslam, and God bless him.
God bless him.
Yeah, he was like, "Hey, can you give me a video?" I was like, "Dude, I'm literally composing on my computer keyboard, so you might as well just make something up." And he like found a picture of me and just like spun it around and did it flashing and made it all metal. And then there was another collab that I was supposed to do with somebody who I won't say because he'll probably someday listen to this. And I had to drop out because I was like, "Did you expect video of this?" He's like, "Yeah." It's like, "I'm sorry, I can't." So I need to get on that.
That's a great example of setting expectations in the initial email, because I've done that with my good friends in Lame Genie. We have had so much fun working with each other because, you know, we made it very clear from the get-go what gear I had, what gear they had, and the best way that we can make our videos look like they're filmed together. Same with Legendav, same with so many people, Ro, so many people that I've worked with. We've touched on that because I like to go the extra mile. If I know I'm going to be appearing on someone else's channel, to match whatever they have, their look, their feel. And especially now in this remote world, you should be conscious of that in the video world. You know, if you're filming something that looks like a webcam, no shade to webcams, but if you're looking like something that doesn't match what your collaborator is doing, it's going to look a little off. It'll feel a little off. And I feel like in YouTube world, when the collaborations feel seamless, like it really was put together, working together, and they've communicated on what the vision is, those collabs are incredibly memorable, right? Because
you mean like the Fall Guys collab you just did with Lame Dude?
Well, I mean, that was
that was retweeted by their official account.
That was awesome.
That was a great cover, though. But I know,
oh my god.
Well, it's funny because Ro was talking to me about something. Oh, you think? No, was it? Ro was mentioning some collab recently, and he was saying the same thing. It was Christian Richardson for their Moon Rock album.
Yeah,
one of the videos that they did, he was saying, actually, he was talking with Peter Gillette. That's right. He wasn't talking with me. But anyways, he was talking with Peter Gillette, the main host for Game Gurus Uncovered, about that, and saying that he and Christian really worked hard to create like a backdrop that was the same and had the same settings, and I think you know, I feel like, I mean, I get the people, I don't know, I'm kind of lazy, so I can get the people that are like, I don't want to deal with a video, but at the same time, it's like, this YouTube is a video platform.
Exactly.
So when the you know, the extra effort is put into it, it's so much, like you said, it's much more seamless, it's much less jarring, and ultimately, like, you, I think there's a space for everybody. You know, there's a space for the people that just want to put out the music and they're not super concerned about the video. But it's like, if you really want to go that extra mile and really see your video, like, hopefully reach like a much, I'd say, hopefully wider audience, then that those extra things can help, I think, for sure. And they shouldn't be overlooked. It shouldn't be like the music is the only thing that matters. It's like, eh. Maybe on Spotify, but not on YouTube.
Yeah, and people really want to see you. I mean, I know there's so many people who are not into that, and that's fine. For a long time, I only showed my hands, or I only showed, like, just, you know, maybe, like, my torso, basically. And I get that, and I understand that. But personally, too, the reason I go onto YouTube is to see someone playing it. Even if you're dubbing, it doesn't matter. Like, I want to see the human who is playing that instrument, singing that part. I want to see it, because then I like want to know more about you, you know, and I think that's something that can inhibit growth a lot of the time, because people don't want to share what they look like, or they don't feel confident in how they can play on camera. And it's like, well, in a visual medium, though, I want to see that. I want to be invested in you as the musician, the artist.
Right. Well, it's, you know, I think they're recently, you know, obviously yourself, you mentioned Ro Panaganti. I would also say Julia Henderson is someone else that I've really enjoyed the fact that they've created like a very what do you call it? Just like, they created a video style, visual style that's very distinguishable. Mm-hmm. That's, definitely. You know, especially with her Persona 5 covers lately, with her and Zurachi. Or I guess love it's Lorenzo de Sicaro. Yeah, they're just fantastic. And even like Lame Genie, you mentioned Lame Genie. Yeah. They have that like live raw appeal.
Yep.
I've seen them live at MAGFest a couple times too, and they kind of have the same energy on stage. They're just like goofy dudes mm-hmm. who can shred, like who can actually shred live. Like they're
amazing. So much fun. They are amazing live.
I love them. I wish more people need to listen to Lame Genie for sure.
They do. More people need to listen to Lame Genie. Go check them out immediately.
Yeah,
post
this
interview.
Yeah, I just think that. I definitely don't want to call anybody out, but I think a lot of times videos are kind of seen as like either the afterthought or like mm-hmm. the hassle. And it's like, find a way to make it fun, you know, find a way to be creative with it. I'm trying to think of some other people that you know, another person that does like real simplistic, but effective stuff is Daniel mm-hmm. Capo. He's done a couple videos like incorporating just like some like nature footage or whatever. I even like that. Mm-hmm. If not, it's another guitar or another person that's done that. They took like nature footage at some, I don't know, Colorado State Park. I'm totally not getting the location right. But it was just awesome because it was like it matched the music. It doesn't have to be crazy. Like obviously if you can create a visual identity, that's great. But sorry, I kind of went off on a tangent of like all these other artists that I love, but I agree.
I feel like the important thing in a visual medium is to make something that you feel represents the music. And but it should be visual, just my opinion, hot take, sorry, but it mm-hmm. should be visual. Just, you know, you can make a music video and it can be very simple. You could be walking down the street and the music could be playing.
Are you talking about your lo-fi video? Because that was awesome.
That was a impulsive thing that I really wanted to do one weekend because I just finished that track. And it brought me so much peace. And I went, you know, I just want to make something a little different. And let's just go for it. So
did anybody like stop to look at you when you were doing that? Because that was all I was thinking the whole time that I did the video. That's what I was like.
There was one man who was on a bicycle who came by when I was under that bridge.
Yeah.
And he definitely looked at me a little funny. And I was like, hello, just keep going, please.
Just let me have my moment. But, like, it matched the music so perfectly. That's the thing is, like, you talk about versatility with music. That's some versatility with, like, you know, video work and visual branding. Mm-hmm. So,
it
really made a difference. So, it was cool. And I definitely want to see, I would love to see more stuff like that, obviously, both from
there
you and other people.
There might be more coming from me.
Yeah, and you know, I mentioned Ro. I know Ro's like a big outdoorsy guy as far as filming. He and like Carlos did that one Pokemon video. Mm-hmm. It was like all over the place. Like,
dedication. I swear. Yeah.
And for me, speaking of visuals, my dream one day is to be the triple D of VGM and just drive around like Guy Fieri and hang out with people at their home studios. Be like, hey, I'm kicking it with Lacey Johnson in California.
Oh my God.
Grow
Alan,
goatee.
Please do that. I would
get a
cry.
Flaming t-shirt.
You better have a flaming shirt to honor
of course,
our Lord and Savior
of course.
Guy Fieri.
Yes. I'm big
Flavor
Guy Fieri.
Town.
Big Guy Fieri fan. So
Me too.
I'm glad we're on the same page. Mm-hmm. I feel like we've totally gotten off topic, but that's okay.
No, I think it's very appropriate. Guy Fieri has a lot to do with collaboration.
That's true, and he has a very strong visual brand.
That's right. See? Everyone just be Guy Fieri. Yeah. That's the motto of this. Be Guy Fieri.
So, well, I think we've touched a lot about collaboration.
Yeah.
One thing I want to get into... I was curious about your studio setup, right?
Yes.
So do you actually like rent out a studio or did you just build that like where you live
I just built it in the room that I live.
Okay.
And it's been I basically just occupy a corner of my room.
Okay.
I've treated the walls and, you know, it's been years in the making, definitely.
Right.
We have... All my audio stuff is at my place, and then all the video stuff is at my boyfriend Peter Hardy's garage. Okay. We have taken over the garage in the house that he lives, and okay. we've made a video studio there, and we have our full green screen and our photo paper and all the lighting and everything's over there.
Okay. So, I was going to say that's perfect segue because I wanted to mention Peter.
Yes.
Because one, obviously he's a very big part of Lacey Johnson videos,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I guess I want to say, like, how does that work? Like, do you come to him with ideas, or do you, you know, you make the music and then let him listen to it and then he comes up with the idea for the video, or is it kind of like 50-50? I'm just kind of curious.
It definitely varies. I would say lately the way that we've been doing it is, even when I'm just in planning stages before I've even started recording, I have some sort of idea of how I want it to look, mm-hmm. but and then, you know, he's always down. He's like, yeah, whatever you want, let's do it. But if it's, you know, pretty much your every week sort of cover, if I'm not very specific, he gets a little creative with it. And sometimes we try to imitate lighting from other music videos or techniques from other videos.
Mm-hmm.
One that we had way too much fun filming was the Time to Make History video from Persona 4, because I got a hold of a baseball bat and I decided that I really wanted to do match cuts with baseball bats. So basically a match cut is where you have a camera move really fast and then you have it moving in that same direction and you're cutting to a different take, basically. So it okay. creates this seamless feeling of the camera's like moving really fast and then there's a transition that you don't notice. So okay. We had a lot of fun with that one because I didn't have a golf club, but normally the protagonist in Persona 4 attacks with a golf club, and I went, baseball's fine. So I had to attempt to do a match cut, pretty much aiming my baseball bat at our camera, which he was not thrilled about, but it came out really great. So, I mean, in the end, it was cool.
I actually have a story, yeah. but I'm going to let you finish.
But no, I mean, every video is a little different, and we kind of try and plan out the ones where we have to travel somewhere or if I want to be outside somewhere. Obviously now, especially, we have to plan if it's safe to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, it pretty much is. Or we'll just go in, you know, his backyard or mine and just kind of like try and make a new location pretty yeah. much from my other videos. But it's really fun. And I feel like those moments where we are kind of trying to plan what we want, things just kind of create themselves out of that. Like if I go in with an idea like, oh, I want like a really big mood lighting, he'll deliver that and then some, which is right. crazy. I mean, that's his gift. He just has a complete visual image in his mind and he can create it on the fly, and I'm just very grateful because I don't know how he does that. It's really cool.
So speaking of putting things in cameras and whatnot, I have a funny story.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh,
so no. I was a youth of 16 years old, and okay. we were making a music video for Linkin Park. That's right. I can't even remember what track, but it was off of Hybrid Theory.
Oh.
And we had my Sony camera with the negative effect on or whatever it's Perfect. Called. I forget. And we had done almost a whole day of shooting. And I was just, your typical ninja walking through the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got, well, actually, I was filming my friend who was a typical ninja walking through the woods, as you do for a Linkin Park video.
Of course.
And I needed him to stab at the camera, but rather than not do that, it went exactly as you could imagine.
Oh, no.
I hid it from my parents for like, I think 10 years before I finally broke down and told him, like, yeah, my friend stabbed me with a ninja sword. And I still have a scar. And it really hurt.
Oh, no.
And then I lost the footage. That's the worst part of that story. Oh. I lost the footage.
Couldn't even document.
Because it was hilarious. It was me getting stabbed, the camera falling, and my friend be like, dude, you just stabbed him. Dude, are you okay? It was like me and two other friends. And it was like, If you two had been around at that point, that would have been viral. I would never have had to work another day in my life. But unfortunately, this was before YouTube. probably for good reason. But anyways, it's not on topic.
It lives on in your memory.
Yes.
And in your scar.
So I have a good question for you, though. Sure. So for people that don't have a Peter Hardy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because not everybody has a Peter Hardy.
No.
How would you recommend for, you know, how would you recommend, like, what advice would you give to somebody who doesn't have someone else to help them with filming? Because I feel like, you know, having an extra body, I know that Ro a lot of times uses a friend of his. Mm-hmm. I know that, you know, several other people use significant others, mm-hmm. or like, what is it, Family Jewels uses Corey Dyer to do a lot of videography, and I think Jack does now too.
Yeah, yeah.
It's great, right? And it totally mm-hmm. changes the video. But somebody starting out, you know, they're not going to have that luxury necessarily. I mean, you can strap a camera to a dog or cat, but then, you know, who knows what you're going to get.
You'll get a viral video if it
goes
true. Really far.
That's
but no,
true.
I started with just my cell phone and a tripod. Okay. When I started, I literally used the front-facing camera, I know. But it was what I had, and it was kind of what taught me what I look like on camera, basically, because I know... Actually, I had no idea prior to that point what I looked like when I performed or sang or did anything. So it's important to have some way to monitor yourself. And so many cameras, let's say you even have like a camera, so many cameras have monitor apps now that are free that you can have your phone sync to it basically and act as a monitor.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, getting comfortable with a tripod in some way is a great way to get that moving. There's a lot of things. Oh, and I'm definitely not the editing pro here, but there's a lot of things in Adobe Premiere that we use to create like a camera movement effect, mm-hmm. if necessary. So there's a lot of ways to add energy, even if you're doing it yourself.
Okay.
But I'd say the most important thing, no matter what your setup is to be aware of how you look on camera. So mm-hmm. that way you're entertaining, because if you're not really moving and you're staying very still and it just looks very stagnant and without mm-hmm. passion, it's not going to be very entertaining to watch. Mm. So I think there's a lot of ways that artists in general can spice up their performances. And I feel like monitoring, self-monitoring, knowing, you know, what am I doing here? Or what, you know, what is my face looking like in this scene, that can help create a very engaging image for the audience.
Yeah, and that doesn't, I feel like that doesn't come natural to a lot of people.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, even for me, when I first started GameLark, God, how many years ago? 5 years ago, mm-hmm. and I was doing, like, vlogs or whatever, I was, like, super nervous, and I just hated looking at the camera, and
yep.
I felt like,
so did
I felt like, what's it, Will Ferrell from Talladega Nights, where my hands just go up, and I'm like, I just want to win, I just want to win today, like... It's
no,
not
that,
something
though.
That comes natural. And also, yeah. you know, as far as the performance thing goes, again, mm-hmm. going back to a visual medium,
yeah,
I agree. Because the worst thing, even like seeing live musicians, I can remember one of the most disappointing shows I went to was Mastodon, which I know Mastodon mm-hmm. is a great band, but live, they were not good that time. They just stood there the whole time and like barely moved. And I'm just like... What's going on? Like, are they stoned? Who knows?
I know. You never know. That
get
honestly
into
could
the
be the
music,
case. When you're just, like, not moving because you can't really fall over, that's that could be the case. But
and I get it. There are certain genres for maybe that's, like, more acceptable or okay. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, you're not going to see classical music or classical shows necessarily with a ton of movement like that, but for a metal show, I mean, come on, you gotta get into it. So I would say, you know, that is a good point, getting comfortable on camera. For you, I would for sure say, like, that was, you know, I don't know, I guess I'm gonna flatter you a little bit here. One of the I remember, I can't remember which video, I was actually thinking about this the other day before this interview, I cannot remember what the video was or what first couple of videos I watched, but I remember just thinking that you had like a lot of like infectious energy, like you had a lot of charisma, and I definitely would, I mean, obviously music is a big part of that, but the comfortability in front of the camera, right? Mm-hmm. Like your movements and just like how you sang and whatever, right? That je ne sais quoi, to be, you know, fancy. It mattered. And I was just like, this person looks like they're having a great time. They're just having a ball and like they're being goofy and they don't really care. You know what I mean? You kind of have to just not give a, you know, F.
Yeah. Well, you know, the reality is, and I think a lot of people are afraid to have fun on camera because it could come across as you know, something negative, and people on the internet are not kind always. So believe me, I've been called just about every name in the book. And it's something that you kind of have to not care about.
Right.
And the reason I do YouTube is for me. You know, I'm not banking all of my career on it, but it's building my career, which is cool. But, you know, it's something that what other people think of me is not at all what I think of myself. And what mm-hmm. I love to do is perform more than anything. And I know that's unique. So, I mean, I'm always the one who's like, oh, let me play this for you. Oh, let me play this song for you. God help my college roommates. They had to hear that a lot. But it's you know, it's something I love to do. And it's music, especially now. My YouTube music is stuff I love to share with people and I love to get excited about. And, you know, the energy and the emotion on my face is 100% real.
Yeah.
Because I love what I'm doing. And I think really, if you love whatever style you're doing, it comes across on your right. face. So I've thank you for those kind words. Sometimes I think my face is something that I'm surprised people enjoy seeing, but you know,
it's no, nice but to, I mean, to hear that. I just wanted to say that, like, yeah, I mean, it's hard because, you know, you're like, well, I wouldn't say lip syncing, but you're like recording after the fact, right? Correct. Most of the time you're not doing live recording and you're trying Correct. To get into this mind space. And you, like you said, you don't want to come off corny, but yeah. you don't want to come off like flat. Yeah. Actually, it was funny. I remember doing this video way back in the day of like, it was like a super cut of Roe Panaganti, Project Genesis and Rashadi B like playing guitar in the Hall of the Mountain King. You can look it up if you really want to, or I'll send it to you after this is done. And yes. it was just like all their rock posts. Isn't like Eric Project Genesis. Mm-hmm. He's definitely somebody that's like, you know, he's a punk kid. So he's always doing like the power stances and like the Hell kicks yeah. and jumping around. And like, I mean, I know him, you know, personally having mm-hmm. been to MacFest with him, and that's 100% accurate as far as his real life personality. So,
right.
Yeah, I think that's all kind of critical to, like, I don't know, like you said, putting yourself out there. I know brand sometimes has like that negative connotation, but I do feel like it's not always negative, right? Like you're creating yeah. an impression, basically. You're creating right. like you know, you got to think about it from somebody that doesn't know you, that hasn't heard your music before, that has no idea what you do. Mm-hmm. So if you're putting out a video and let's say, I don't know, I mean, like, the more comfortable you can be, the more you can be, the better chances you have of attracting people's attention and keeping their attention, I think.
Yeah, well, and the audience can tell if someone isn't believing what they're saying, or, mm-hmm. you know, and I feel even just as simple as redubbing something that you've done, you can tell if someone isn't being true to that performance, like
mm-hmm.
and I feel most of the time if someone performs in an authentic manner, I don't care if there are wrong notes, I don't care if the dubbing's not right, I love it. Right. I want someone who just is being completely authentic, and if that's singing incredible opera style of, you know, One Winged Angel or shredding something, like, make me feel something. That's what yeah. I'm looking for in performances always. Because that's what I'm going to bring always.
That's a good point. That's a very yeah. good point. Yeah. So I think we kind of touched a lot of bases, but I wanted to kind of end on a, since, you know, this is a series mm-hmm. meant to kind of uplift the community.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you had any like thoughts on the community as a whole and just, you know, for people that are, let's say, like, where do you see yourself right now? I guess those are the two questions I kind of want to get your answer on. One, like, how do you see yourself fitting into community? What advice would you give to people starting out? And two, you know, what's your relationship with the VGM community and where do you see yourself going? Like, I know that you've clearly put in the effort and time into this stuff. What are you hoping to do? Are you hoping to kind of use this as like a launch pad for future things to get into like original music, or are you looking to just kind of do you know, build up an audience of people that are interested in the same music that you are, and then kind of celebrate that. I know I'm giving you a lot of options, but I think the reason I'm asking that is that, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. And I think VGM is in this interesting place where there are some people that have been able to make this like a career per se. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And then there's people that are trying to get there. And then there's the people that I feel like this is only ever going to be a hobby for them, and that's perfectly okay. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a space for everybody. But I think for somebody like yourself, you've clearly got the drive to make it more than just a hobby.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you're at a professional level in terms of like sustaining yourself from it yet. But that's why I kind of wanted to ask you, where do you see yourself as far as goals go? And what would you say, like, oh, I want to be, you know, making covers, you know, and then getting sweet movie deals or whatever.
Well, I would say I'm definitely toward the very ambitious end of the spectrum. Music is my profession.
Right.
It is what I do full time, all aspects of it. And it's unique, but that is definitely where I'm coming from with it. So for me, I'm a little bit of a dreamer. You know, I would love to do this as my full-time job. And I love content creation, and I really have enjoyed doing it in collaboration with some of my friends who have brands and some of my, you know, friends who just are doing it because they love it. I love it too. So, I mean, for me, it's definitely a multifaceted thing. I do want this to be my main gig, especially right now. I'm enjoying it so much, and I want to expand even further, and I want to play on game soundtracks. I want to assist in composition for games. I feel I have a lot to offer to composers in that aspect. And it's something I've done in my professional production career when I worked as a producer. I like to collaborate with people to create something original or in tribute. And I feel that no matter where you are, you just need to work in where your ambitions are. Because if you want a million subscribers, and if you want, you know, partnerships and all this, then you have to be willing to put in the effort and build relationships and make the connections to get yourself there. It's something I still am working on. And I mean, I'm still, I guess, a baby in this scene. You know, I've only had my channel for a little over 3 years. So I'm trying every day to make connections, genuine ones, too. I don't feel like any of the connections in the VGM music scene have been forced. And I'm very fortunate about that. I really feel like the people that I've met, and I've been lucky to meet so many in person, have been so genuine and so passionate and fun, you know? And I feel like if you're willing to get into this scene, it's because you love music of games, you know? And that's something I feel like all of us can connect with, because, you know, I'll nerd out about Final Fantasy for literally hours until someone asks me to stop. And I know some people are that way about Zelda, and that's the covers that they make, or, you know, Metroid or whatever. It's so exciting to have conversations with these people in the community, even on Twitter, on Instagram. Like, there's still connections regardless, you know, and I'm looking forward to eventually being able to travel to a MAGFest when the world isn't on fire.
You should do it. It's so
I want to, believe me.
When the world isn't on fire. Yeah, I'm pretty much certain even if they're having it, I won't be going this year just because kids and can't.
Yeah, but, no, I know. Yeah. I think that's probably the consensus of a lot of people too, just currently. But you know, if you're thinking about making video game covers, do it. Because usually any one of us are always looking for covers of games. I always search up covers of games that I love. Believe me, I've seen just about every Final Fantasy X cover that exists on YouTube. I don't care how many subscribers you have. If it's good, I'll watch it.
Have you talked to 16 and Mono at all about a collab? Because that dude really loves he loves Final Fantasy X.
Yeah, like, big time. I should.
You should. And he needs to come back into VGM, but don't tell him I said that.
Yeah, well, I've seen he's been making some really great tunes outside of, you know,
the scene.
But, you know, I mean, I'd say the best way to get into a scene is to do it and just be really authentic and passionate about what you're doing. And I've been very lucky, but the people will come and they will be excited. If you're excited, they'll be excited. So it's a lot of persistence and it's a lot of communication. And, you know, I mean, believe me, I nerd out about so many people in this scene. I'm obsessed with so many people. I don't want to be weird, but you know, if I see anyone
specifically who,
No. We're not going to go there. We're not going to fangirl. You know, even no matter what, like people that I know and I've worked with, if they like something that I post, I like freak out about it because it's like, oh my God, they liked me. They saw me. It's like so exciting. I don't know. It's, I love it. I genuinely love it.
So. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and I also want to think back to some of the things that you said, and these are some other good tips for people that are either let's say like beginner, intermediate, mm-hmm. maybe moving towards advanced, you know, being willing to learn, right?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, this is kind of where I find myself right now, and I don't want to make it about me, but as far as music making goes, I'm at a point where it's like I know what I'm making is not like I'm not super happy with it. But at the same time, I don't want to just put out something just to put it out. But at the same time, the only way to get better is to just make stuff and then learn from it. So I think being willing to learn, I truly think that there's so many people within this community that are open to giving advice or to collaborate or to tell you like, hey, this is what you might want to do, or here's an idea on mix. You know, obviously, it seems like you're pretty open to that kind of thing. I know Ro Panaganti is like always down to give advice.
He's the VGM Jedi, in case anyone was very curious.
He
will give you amazing advice. So,
So I think that's the other thing is like, be willing to learn and be willing to ask questions and, you know, There is a certain like, what do you call it? Like protocol with collaborations. You know, it's hard to cold call people and be like, hey, let's collaborate. But I think that what you do is, you know, you make your music, see who enjoys it, and then find people that have a similar, like either musical philosophy or similar style or just something where you actually have like a idea, and then you approach them. And there's like a way to do that, which I don't think we necessarily have to get into, but I think that, you know, you got to be courteous for sure. And it's best to kind of start out without just a cold call, I feel like. I feel like having like a common ground of like, hey, I saw this cover of yours. I really liked how you did X, or I really like this series, or like, I don't know, I'm working on something. Would you mind listening to it? I don't know. Maybe not that one, but we'll see.
Sending blind mixes is definitely an interesting thing. But I would say that's right. Have a connection with someone, even if it's, like you say, you know, reaching out to someone and being like, I mean, I'm working on
it
that one.
It sounds like we're working on a collab. It sounds like we're going to work on a collab. See how I did that?
I see that. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. No, but really, you know, making a connection with someone is not that hard. It may seem so at first, but I think definitely if you have common ground and, you know, just reaching out and saying, oh my God, I loved this cover. I listen to it all the time. definitely not something I've done, but it's flattering to hear it anyway, just because, you know, most people, I can speak from experience, have put, you know, 30 plus hours into whatever that video was that you saw.
Like, right.
I love hearing that someone loved it. I'm like, oh, thank God my work and effort meant something, you know? So
can I just say that nice. I loved The Only One They Fear Is You? Because when that came out, I was like, she's not going to cover this. And I was like, holy shit.
I did.
It was great. It was great. Speaking of versatility and saying that we love covers, also that soundtrack is just chef's kiss.
Pops off so hard.
Yeah. So, those are all good things.
Yeah. Okay. Be friends. Be friendly. Be nice. To work with someone or wait. Be willing to wait as well.
Right. Well, I think the trust, and there has to be like some trust in some relationship there and some common ground. Yeah, I feel like, especially like you might even realize, like you start talking with somebody and find out their workflow is like not yours, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some people that are just very like not organized, and maybe you realize that and like, I don't think we would be a good fit. You know what I mean? Yep. You kind of, it's kind of like, I don't want to say like dating, but in a way it kind of is.
It is. No, it totally is. Yeah. It's a working relationship. I mean, really, like you said, exactly. I have an extremely tight time frame because I do work mostly week to week, maybe every 2 weeks to weeks. But a lot of people have things planned months in advance, or you know, they might be totally tapped out. And I feel like it's important to gauge kind of at that time where that person is and, you know, understand that, oh, well, I can do this video and it'll come out next month, or, oh, I need this by Friday, or, you know, setting that expectation on both sides, being more than willing to understand someone's timeline. That's very important.
And that just gave me a great idea for a VGM site called Collab. That's like a dating site where you enter what you're looking for and your style and all this stuff. And then you can find potential collaborators. But
I dig it. I dig it.
But anyways, I think I've talked for long enough, I know. Thank you so much for joining me in this inaugural Game Grooves Platinum chat for Game Grooves Uncovered. Don't get the brands confused here. There's a lot of branding going on. You get your main Game Grooves, right, which is the gold and black Game Grooves. The platinum, which is me recognizing special artists, Lacey Johnson in this case. And it's going up on Game Grooves Uncovered, which is the podcast that I don't manage because I'm lazy and I'm tired and I have two kids. So I told Peter Gillette, you handle that.
There you go. I mean, but that's, you're setting apart what work you can do, what you need to delegate. And there's nothing wrong with delegation. Nothing wrong with that.
And he's been doing a great job. Shout out to Peter. Thank you for getting this all started.
Thanks, Peter.
I've done Podbean before, and I was like, I think you can put stuff up on Spotify. He's like, you can, and iTunes too. And I was like, good, because I don't want to have to deal with it. And he's going to edit the audio for this too. Perfect. Thanks, Peter. But hey, you know. Anyways, thank you for coming out. Do you have any other final thoughts? Anything you want to – how about a little – tell us what you're working on, maybe like one or two little teasers.
Oh, what am I working on? Well, I am currently, literally at this moment, looking at some of the new material that KDA is releasing.
Oh, okay.
Very excited about this one that I'm working on. So that will be coming very soon.
I'm all about that KDA.
Yeah.
Definitely don't have crushes on any of these virtual women. But
honestly, me neither. Not at all. Not all not. Four of them. but anyway, I'm working on that. I've got a throwback to Final Fantasy VII Crisis Core that's gonna come out soon, and something incredibly special for later this month when we hopefully hit 3,000 subscribers.
Oh, that's right, you're less than 50 away now, aren't you?
I am.
Okay.
So close.
Hopefully by the time this comes out, you'll have passed it. Just blown past it.
That would be cool. That would be very, very cool.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, those are all very good and exciting things, and I hope that everyone listening tunes into those things and tunes into future Game Grooves Uncovered and Game Grooves Platinum episodes.
Y'all so, better.
Yeah. Y'all better. Lacey, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks,
thank
Alan.
You so much for your insight. And thank you for, honestly, thank you for being like a beacon in the VGM community. I can use that. The VGM collab queen, if that's all right with you.
I am a beacon. The collab queen beacon.
There you go.
Yeah. And if anyone wants to collab, reach out. I currently only have like a couple right now, so reach out.
Uh-oh. You've opened the floodgates. Here, I gotta end it.